It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
We're going to get to our guest in just a moment. I just want to point one other thing out, and I wrote about this today at townhall.com. The organization known as CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, C-A-I-R, they put out this statement over the weekend during Iran's attack against Israel. Quote, "We call on the Biden administration to reject the far-right Israeli government's transparent attempt to distract from the Gaza genocide by dragging the U.S. into a regional war and instead demand that the Israeli government de-escalate the crisis it started." That's what CAIR put out. Number one, it's crazy. It's lunatic stuff that Iran attacking Israel was somehow a distraction by Israel. Number two, there is no Israeli genocide in Gaza. That's a lie. An absolute sick lie. The genocidal party in that war is Hamas. Number three, Israel did not start this conflict. You can go all the way back and do the whole history thing, or just recently, this is not just a retaliation for the strike in Syria against the IRGC. That was done in response to October 7th, which Iran is at least significantly responsible for. Israel didn't start this. There was a ceasefire on October 6th. Iran and its proxy Hamas broke it, as they so often do. And finally, just a friendly reminder about CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, this group that seems to exist to lecture us about Islamophobia, their leader, their executive director, after October 7th, gave a speech on camera celebrating October 7th, the massacre of 1,200 people. He supported it. This is a pro-terrorism organization. That was also an unindicted co-conspirator in a huge terrorism funding case the federal government had years ago. That's what CAIR is. Their leader supports Hamas and supports October 7th. He said so publicly. And yet they wag their finger at us, the rest of us, for being quote-unquote Islamophobic. I think it's actually very rational to fear someone or a group, in this case CAIR, that supports terrorism openly. And they put out a lie-filled statement like this, urging the administration. And until very recently, these people worked hand in glove with this administration. They were brought into all sorts of different groups and task forces and round tables. And then they let the mask slip. Oh, by the way, we support October 7th. It's like, well, friendly folks over at CAIR. Just an update on them. And with that, let's bring in Morgan Ortegas, former spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State, founder of Polaris National Security. Morgan, it's great to have you back here.
Thanks, Guy. I'm not sure I have anything to say after that monologue. That was pitch perfect.
Well, I appreciate it. I wanted to get that line in there about CAIR, because that's a group that has been treated like a legitimate civil rights organization by the
media
for years, and they are anything but, and they have exposed themselves for exactly what they are. And it's just useful to remind everyone that CAIR is a pro-terrorism radical group operating inside the United States. And it's not surprising, Morgan, because right before you joined us in the previous segment, we played the audio, I don't know if you've seen the video yet, of activists in Chicago being trained to chant in Farsi, "Death to America," in advance of the DNC convention. We heard "Death to America" in Dearborn, Michigan recently. These are not minor isolated events. We're seeing more of this. It's highly disturbing.
Yeah, listen, but you don't even have to go as far as CAIR. I mean, CAIR is certainly, they're a terrible organization. You know, it is a pro-terrorism organization, as you mentioned, masquerading as some sort of civil rights organization. It's ridiculous. But listen, there's new reporting out today from the Washington Examiner that the Iranian Influence Network, this had been reported on. You probably remember this story.
Yes.
It actually came up in September. It was just weeks before October 7th. So it made a lot of news, but then it got buried, I think, because because obviously because October and sadly because October 7th happened. But the Washington Examiner is saying members of this Iranian influence network secured at least 10 Biden White House visits. And these were three members of what Iran called their, you know, government-controlled influence programs, influence network, in order to influence United States policy towards Iran. So, you know, I tweeted this out sort of half-heartedly, but, you know, I think I mean it, that Biden's Iran policy makes a lot more sense when you realize that the regime's advisors are also the White House's advisors. And that's, by the way, that's not even me being facetious.
That's been reported
out.
White
House visitor log.
Yep.
Yeah, that's in the Washington Examiner today. Just broke less than an hour ago.
So, I mean, highly relevant. And that brings us to this attack over the weekend, which I think is being falsely framed as Iran's retaliation to Israel. No, it is Iran's retaliation to Israel's retaliation to Iran's October 7th malfeasances, which were extremely deadly to the Israeli people. And of course, Iran is responsible for all these rockets being fired at Israel constantly. So I think that's a misframing of it. But I think you made such an important point over the weekend from a foreign policy standpoint, a diplomatic standpoint. This administration, following in the footsteps of the Obama team, a lot of them are the same people, they have appeased Iran and made concessions to Iran, shocking ones in some cases, at every step. And some of those concessions, you can draw a direct line from what the Democratic leadership in this country gave to Iran and then what happened to Israel over the weekend, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, unquestionably. Listen, as I said, I was on with our colleague Maria Bartiromo this morning on Fox Business, and I said this didn't happen since October 7th. This was 3 years of appeasement policy that Biden and Blinken and Jake Sullivan, all of them had their hands in the Iran nuclear deal, the failed JCPOA deal, by the way. This is 3 years of policy. So similarly, let's just take an example of the Trump administration with Abraham Accords. As I was saying to people there, because people would always ask me, well, how did you guys get Abraham Accords? How did you get the first peace deals between Israel and Arab states in 26 years? I said, guys, there's a reason why we got it on year four of the Trump presidency and not year one or not year two, because the seeds that you plant from a policy perspective early in administration take time to grow. Sometimes you're lucky, and as in our case, it actually, you know, those seeds grew into this beautiful tree of a peace, the Abraham Accords tree. Sometimes it would happen in a second term. But for the Biden administration, they started sowing seeds of appeasement with Iran from the moment that they stepped foot into the door. They named Robert Malley, Blinken did. This was his college roommate and best friend. He had a blind spot for the guy, named him as his top Iran envoy. And this is by all accounts, a guy that, listen, is at least according to the FBI, according to the inspector general at the State Department who's doing an investigation, this guy has been up to no good, right? Because he was fired. He lost his security clearance.
Yeah.
There's an IG investigation into him at the State Department. There's an FBI investigation into him. This was the man that Tony Blinken was his college roommate. And this was the person who you could not pick. If you tried to pick the person who was the biggest appeaser in chief as it relates to the Islamic Republic of Iran, you would pick Rob Malley, right? And when they made that appointment, so many of us were just confounded because we thought they've learned nothing from 4 years of the Trump administration. You can hate Trump. You can hate his tweets. You can say the orange man is bad. You can do all this stuff, but you've got to at least look at the policy and look at the proof and say, you know what? Abraham Accords, peace deals, that was a good thing. The maximum economic pressure campaign against Iran, we wouldn't have done that. But how do we take the leverage that the Trump administration left us and used it? Instead, the first thing they did,
they reversed it. They squandered it.
They totally squandered the opportunity of leverage. And by the way, the maximum economic pressure campaign that we had against Iran was 10 times more vicious than anything Biden has put on Russia. We actually took Iranian oil off the market, off the table. The Chinese didn't buy it. The Indians didn't buy it. The Japanese didn't buy it. And we did it all without raising the price of oil because we knew that we had to unleash domestic energy production in order to offset. We knew that we would need the Saudis and others to be able to pump to make up for taking Iranian oil off of the market. And so this was a serious effort to curb the behavior of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We wanted them to have to make real world choices. Were they going to fund their terror organizations? Or were they going to fund like new roads and schools and public health, you know, infrastructure? We wanted them to have to make costly decisions. We know, sadly, anytime they can try, they're going to fund their terror apparatus. But that just shows who they are. One final point I would make on Iran, and I have for your listeners who follow me on X, I'm at Morgan Ortegas. I retweeted a Persian woman this morning who was lambasting liberals for pretending like over the weekend that they stand with the regime.
Oh, she's so good.
You've had women that have been protesting. You have women in Iran who have been losing their lives, literally protesting against this regime in order for the right not to have to cover their hair if they don't want to, right? Not to be totally covered head to toe. And the regime is literally killing their own female citizens who dare to move kind of showing their own hair. So Persian women who are stuck under this disastrous Islamic Republic of Iran are saying, how dare you, right? How dare you be so full of anti-Israel hatred that you're going to stand with one of the most oppressive regimes in the world, which, by the way, similar to Hamas, who they fund, train, and equip, would throw gays off the balcony and murder women in cold blood in order to clamp down on their rights.
Yeah, and it's not would, they do. This is what they do as a matter of course in this regime. You also noted on your Twitter or X feed, you reminded people, the Biden administration allowed the UN sanctions on Iranian drones and ballistic missiles to expire just months ago. And then guess what gets fired at Israel? Ballistic missiles and drones over the weekend. I mean, we are funding Iran. We've sent them pallets of cash under both presidencies. We are unlocking and unfreezing assets for the Iranians, trying to get them to the negotiating table on this terrible nuclear deal that they're, you know, fixated on the U.S. side. So they're like tossing money at the regime and letting other like sanctions expire. And then Iran takes the money and predictably starts fomenting terrorism. It's what they do as the top state sponsor of terrorism in the world. And then also these weapons that are no longer sanctioned the same way, they're flying in the air at Israel. I mean, it's the disaster of this policy has unfolded in real time very, very quickly, Morgan.
And by the way, why was there an expiration? Why was there a sunset provision of Iran obtaining ballistic missiles and these kamikaze one-way drones at the UN? Well, again, it's all circular, Guy. Thanks to the failed JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, these types of sunset provisions, one of the first ones happened actually during the Trump administration in October of 2020. There was a conventional weapons ban that was set to expire. Listen, we fought against it tooth and nail. And the Biden administration obviously did nothing at the UN. And how you could just say, oh, well, right, it's expiring and not do anything about it is beyond me. And those are, of course, the same missiles, the same drones that were used to attack Israel over the weekend. And not just Israel. I remind you, our men and women in the Middle East are sitting ducks. We just had three service members killed by one of these drones in Jordan, less than 2 months ago now. And so while we're talking a lot about Iran's attack on Israel, they would be more than happy to kill Americans at their terror group just as recently.
Yeah, no, they haven't. And the Houthis, also controlled by Iran, they've been firing on our people. We lost Marines who were in the process of, or SEALs rather, who were in the process of trying to combat them in the Red Sea. I mean, this is what they do. This is who Iran is. And, you know, we've got a president who keeps saying to everyone, all these bad actors around the world, don't. And they just blow him off and do over
Come
and over
with a new
again.
Line, man. I mean, it's just like embarrassing. Stop saying that. Like,
no,
it
is. It's embarrassing. It's like you say don't, they say, you know, okay, old man, and they do whatever they want. That is. It's humiliating.
It's kind of like me and like my toddler, right? When I tell him not to do something, you have a baby guy. You'll see in a few years with your toddler. It's like the equivalent of me telling my toddler don't, and she does it, right?
Yeah, and then there's no consequences.
Administration has.
No, that's a huge, huge problem for the credibility, not just of one president, whether you like him or not, of the country. It's dangerous for an American president to look that weak to our enemies. Morgan, we have a few minutes left. You've invoked Saudi Arabia and Jordan over the course of this conversation. I want to talk about one of the more heartening things that happened over the weekend. It was largely a huge failure by Iran, not because they didn't try. I mean, the amount of weaponry that they shot at Israel was staggering, but they were stopped thanks to not just the Israelis and us and the Brits and the French, but the Jordanians and the Saudis as well. And, I mean, Iran could have damaged or destroyed the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Temple Mount. I mean, that is one of the most holy sites in three different major religions. And here you had a U.S., Israeli, Western, Arab coalition defending Israel and the Temple Mount and that mosque. Those are pretty dramatic developments, aren't they?
It is, and it's certainly welcome because you have not seen the most positive statements coming out of Jordan. In fact, Queen Rania has just been awful. Really disgraceful, actually, since October 7th, spreading lies and denial about what actually happened to people. I mean, she's been so bad, I would actually call on Republican members of Congress to take another look at exactly what kind of funding we're giving Jordan. Saying that, she's the queen. I don't know that she has any real authority other than spewing disinformation. But at least, as you said, at least it was quite positive to see how their military was involved. And that's actually what you need, where we need to get in order to protect Iran, to protect Israel and to protect our allies and friends from Iran. You need the coalition, by the way, that we were building and the Trump administration under Secretary Mike Pompeo of Arab states and of Israel coming together and saying, no, I mean, listen, the Middle East could essentially be a somewhat peaceful place without the Islamic Republic of Iran. Are you going to have to deal with ISIS? Absolutely. You know, you're always going to have elements of Sunni Wahhabi Islam that are, that you can't stamp out a belief system, a terror belief system. You could certainly destroy the physical caliphate as we did in 2017 and 2018 in the Trump administration. But for the most part, most of the tumult that you see in the Middle East is directly funded and planned and aided and abetted by Iran.
By the regime. And that's the linchpin, Morgan, that regime in Iran. And if you could somehow eliminate that threat, not only would the place be a lot more peaceful in that neighborhood, thrilled out of their minds would be most of the people in Iran, the Iranian people, the Persians themselves, which is such an important point as well. Morgan, we've gone long, up on a break. I've got to take it. Morgan Ortegas, former State Department spokesman under the Trump administration. Morgan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
We'll be right back. Well, in our previous hour, we talked to Morgan Ortegas, who was the top spokesperson at the State Department under Pompeo and Trump on the diplomatic side of things. In the next hour, we will talk to U.S. Senator Tom Cotton and get his reaction to the Iran attack against Israel and the policy implications and the politics of it. On the military side, I am very excited to pick the brain of General Jack Keane, retired four-star general, Fox News senior strategic analyst, and chairman of the Institute for the Study of War. General, always a pleasure having you here.
Yes, delighted to be here, Guy, with you and your audience.
So I saw the tweet thread from the Institute that you lead talking about the nature of this attack by Iran and the volume, this barrage of missiles and drones, and sort of a tactic that you guys argue mirrors something that the Russians have been doing in Ukraine, just on a huge scale. Walk us through that, if you would.
Yeah, well, the Russians certainly have been attacking Ukraine from the air for 2 years now, have really evolved to a place which is very similar to what we saw Iran do, and obviously they're using the Russian playbook, and that is, let's assume the attack was on Kyiv, to swarm Kyiv with drones that light up the air defense systems, have them expend somewhat at those drones, and then follow that on with cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, with the assumption that the cruise and ballistic missiles, at least some of them, will be able to get through the air defense systems because they've been expended against the drones. So that is why you saw in the attack that Iran launched against Israel the most significant number of things that were launched were drones for that reason. And then they followed with about 30 cruise missiles and about 120 ballistic missiles. The drones were somewhere in the neighborhood of about 170. Yeah, so they've taken that out of the Russian playbook. Russia's never done anything quite on the scale that Iran did, so their attack was obviously significant, a comprehensive escalation to be sure. But as we all saw, it's an overwhelming, humiliating defeat for Iran, which exposes serious weaknesses inside their military and the IRGC. And secondly, I mean, it validates the entire IDF multi-layered air defense systems. Frankly, that American engineers have their thumbprint on every one of those systems. And it's the first time ever, you know, that the United States fought along with Israel since the State of Israel was formed. They've never asked for help before. But boy, did they get it this time. Central Command, which is a warfighting organization in the Middle East, led by a very prominent and capable general, Eric Kurilla, he organized and coordinated a multinational response, which included the UK, France, and Arab nations. This is something that CENTCOM is used to doing. Israel and the IDF is used to fighting unilaterally. So this kind of assistance and coordinated something as complicated as multiple nations involved is routine business for Central Command, and it certainly complemented what the IDF was doing. You know, and the fact that the Arab nations were involved here, Guy, is also historic.
Yeah.
In that they were helping Israel defend itself, quite remarkable. You know, it's been an open secret for some time among the Arab nations since the war began on October 7th, that they really want Hamas destroyed. And so for Israel to do that as effectively as they can, they also want the Palestinian Authority leadership to be changed out. They know that these two organizations in and themselves are a cancer.
Well, and they hate Iran.
In the Middle East. Say again?
And they hate Iran, too.
Well, I'm saying the reason why they want them destroyed is because Iran is the enemy.
Yes.
In the Middle East, the primary enemy. And this other, what Hamas does, obviously, is preventing the focus on it. And I think, you know, the other takeaway for me here is that Israel is in a much better place, you know, as a result of the success that they enjoyed. The international community has turned their attention away from criticizing Israel. Not that it won't come back, but they're focused on Iran and also focused on something substantive, and that is in terms of increasing sanctions on Iran. So there is an opportunity here, at least for the next few weeks, possibly, to get some significant sanctions imposed that to get Iran's economy back in the tank where it was when the Trump administration finished and the Biden administration came in and then began to remove those sanctions, which has provided Iran huge amount of funding to support their activities.
Are you surprised, General, not only by the success of Israel plus the coalition that you just mentioned, how effective they were at protecting Israel during this attack? And relatedly, are you surprised by the scope of the failure by Iran? Do you think they're surprised that they failed as badly as they did?
Yeah. The failure by Iran, particularly, we're documenting that close to 50% of the missiles, the ballistic missiles that were fired, malfunctioned. That is absolutely staggering. But it points to something that I'm not surprised by. I've been pointing out in public media that Iran's military is weak. They have an old Air Force still flying U.S. aircraft we gave them in the 1970s when the Shah used to run the country. And a Navy that has patrol boats and a few surface vessels and a few submarines that are inferior, a land force that's large in size, but not particularly well-trained, not particularly well-equipped. And what they have resourced, which they think they've done an adequate job in, is their rocket and missile forces. But here, the rocket and missile forces have obviously failed them miserably. So I have been pointing out that, for the life of me, why the Biden administration does not conduct limited military attacks against these capabilities as a result of the proxy warfare that's been going on, with the threat to Iran that we will continue to do that if you don't shut down your proxies. Iran never wants to fight the United States or Israel. And the reason is they don't want to get into a fight that they know they can't even come close to winning, and it would risk their regime. But yet we don't use that leverage. It's staggering. Hopefully there's an incentive this time, but I'm not optimistic that the Biden administration will find some moral courage here and step up and stop being afraid of a wider war that that Iran does not want to fight.
They're telling, Biden is reportedly telling Israel not to respond militarily. That seems unlikely. There are reports today that Israel's preparing to respond militarily because this was an unprecedented attack, a massive attack against their homeland, their people, by a foreign regime. And the idea that, well, you prevented it from being really bad, so you shouldn't do anything. What kind of advice is that from President Biden, who told Iran not to launch the attack, although reportedly back-channeled sort of like, well, it shouldn't be too big, make it small. It just seems like the whole thing is a disastrous, incoherent foreign policy, and no one's respecting Biden in this. I'm glad that he got our people involved to help Israel over the weekend. That's very important. I'm grateful. But in terms of the signals he's sending, the things that he's telling allies and enemies, it's like everyone's like, what is he doing? There doesn't seem to be respect or fear right now from either of those groups, which strikes me as a dangerous thing.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, when you look at Biden for the 3 years that he's been in power and how Obama handled risk like this, they're completely risk averse. I mean, they get paralyzed by the fear of any potential adverse consequences, never really analyzing what is the impact of doing nothing. What is the impact of being feeble and not responding adequately? They don't walk those things through to completion. And as a result of that, you can see how the world is looking at us. Mm. I mean, the reality is that the disaster in Afghanistan has led to exactly what we said and what we feared would happen.
Yes.
ISIS has returned and it's attacked deep into Europe, into Moscow. They did not deter Russia. And furthermore, by providing advanced weapons belatedly and not on time and in the numbers required, they have protracted the very war in Ukraine and put the country at unnecessary risk. And they say they're in competition with China, but they don't want conflict with China. But we're not winning the competition. The Chinese military is surpassing the United States military. The reality is China has expanded into Africa and into Latin America, just about touching every one of the countries involved. They've swept up and vacuumed all the rare earth minerals, and they're threatening to take Taiwan by force in 2027. Are we winning or losing that competition? Hmm. We're obviously losing it. But when you look at what he's doing here with Israel, our closest ally in the region, wirebrushing them in terms of how they're conducting their military operation and succeeding at it, I may ask, in Gaza, and then also trying to restrain Israel from protecting their own homeland. And you're absolutely right, Guy, when you say this is a massive attack. It exceeded what I thought the Iranians were going to do, to be quite frank about it, full disclosure here. I did not expect to see 120 ballistic missiles and 30 cruise missiles flying at Israel. I knew they would swarm with drones. But that is a staggering attack on Israel, and they have every right to certainly retaliate against
them. Well, and on that point, just to jump in, I mean, we've heard now reports today that the U.S. government has assessed, and obviously someone has sent this in a folder to Joe Biden, the president of the United States. He's been briefed on this, you would imagine and hope. But the assessment of the U.S. is this was intended to be a mass casualty event in Israel. That is what the Iranians were hoping to do and trying to do. This wasn't some pinprick, completely face-saving thing. They wanted blood. They didn't get almost any. There's a very sad exception, but it's a failure on their end. But that's what they wanted to do and would try again in the future, adjusting tactics or what have you. And Biden's telling Israel, don't retaliate, take the W that they didn't kill a bunch of your people. That seems like a crazy thing. Israel's obviously not going to listen to that. They're going to retaliate. So what does that look like in the time that we have left here, General? Given what just happened, what is a realistic, proportional, they want to really exact some damage here to deter this in the future. What is Israel looking at here potentially?
Well, I trust Israel's judgment and how they're going to protect their people based on the events right up to this moment. I've trusted their judgment for the 6 months with the air and ground war inside of Gaza. And I think as they look at this situation, you know, they'll select the right vehicles to use here. And there's plenty of targets for them to use. I think what they'll want to do is make certain that Iran understands if they ever attack Israel again, then Israel will keep coming at them. And they're not going to stand for anything like that. And I think they'll get that message loud and clear. They already have a profound message. I mean, inside of Iran, they have got to be back on their heels as a result of what took place here. I mean, the loss of confidence in the IRGC and the military with such a poor performance here against what was likely to be very high expectations. The other thing is, it is no secret that the proxies have been frustrated with Iran for not taking a more direct role in assisting them in prosecuting the attacks that they've been doing. And they really were frustrated with Iran when they shut down the Iraqi and Syrian militias attacking U.S. bases. They wanted Iran to step up and do more. Can you imagine how stunned they are, Guy, watching what Iran did and what they absolutely failed miserably in trying to meet their expectations here? It's a huge setback for them.
And Israel I'd imagine
will attack, and I think they'll do it somewhat proportionally. I don't see a major, major all-out attack trying to echo what the Iranians did. They know full well they don't have to do that, but they certainly will retaliate. And I think they should not rush into it, because there's an opportunity here for diplomatic movement on a multinational level to maybe get some teeth into the sanctions.
Yeah, some winds finally blowing back in their direction a little bit because of this, not only overreach by Iran and the failure. That's one of the positive things to come out of all of this. General Jack Keane, retired four-star general, senior strategic analyst here at Fox News. General, thank you so much.
Yeah, great talking to you, Guy, and as always, your audience as well.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.